the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to it. It's a Technically Challenged Wednesday. Yeah, I'm Nicole Sandler. We are not on YouTube today because we are having all kinds of technical problems that I have yet to figure out, but I'm going to do my best to figure them out, certainly before we come back tomorrow. So if today's sound is a little off, that's why. I apologize for it in advance, and I'll do my best to fix it all before we return for another show. But today, we're here, a lot going on. We're going to deal with gun violence because we have no choice. We must. I'm also going to tell you something I teased yesterday, but about an app for your phone that can help you when deciding what proprietors to patronize. In other words, where to shop, who to give your business to. There was a bit of a kerfuffle on The View today where Whoopi Goldberg took Deborah Messing to task because Deborah Messing said she wanted to compile a list of all the LA, all the Hollywood elite who were at a Donald Trump fundraiser the other night, so because she doesn't want to work with them. I can't help her with that, but this new app called Goods Unite Us can help you in deciding what brands to purchase, what stores to shop at, what, again, who you want to give your money to. So we'll get into all of that. But first, I'd be remiss if I didn't try to explain what was going on in the UK. It's nuts. Obviously, nobody likes Boris Johnson, not even the members of his own party in Parliament. So yesterday, enough of them bailed on him. A few of them went over from the Conservative Party to the Liberal Democrats, which ensured that Boris Johnson no longer has a majority within Parliament, so he's not able to get anything done. You recall, we discussed this earlier in the week or last week, whenever, that Johnson got the Queen to agree to disband Parliament for 6 weeks, opening the way for Boris Johnson to complete Brexit without a deal, a no-deal Brexit, which we know would be horrible. Well, for our comedy bit to start the show today, I thought we would once again call on the talents of Jonathan Pye. I knew he'd have a new bit up today on YouTube, and sure enough, there it was, because all hell is breaking loose in the UK. Jonathan Pye is a fake newscaster. He does these bits on YouTube where he's a stand-up reporter doing a live shot in front of Westminster Abbey or Parliament or wherever, and before and after his rant, he's doing like a setup for the camera, and then he'll rant to the cameraman until the pre-recorded piece is up or until it's his time to go live, and then he does his, you know, his scripted shtick for the TV station. But when you're hearing him rant, this is Jonathan Pye just ranting about what's going on in Great Britain. So with no further ado, take it away, Jonathan Pye.
Well, it's going to be another exciting afternoon and evening of debate in the Commons. Let's catch up on all the day's events so far. I'm not sure taking a sledgehammer into the House of Commons and swinging it round your head, killing anything that gets in your way, is taking back control of Parliament. You know, up until yesterday, I was laughing at all those wankers spending days and weeks in Westminster shouting to stop the queue. Don't these people have jobs to go to? You know, a coup is a group of big burly soldiers in tanks wearing balaclavas and brandishing machine guns. This lot are just a bunch of morally corrupt streaks of piss in Aston Martins wearing their old school ties and brandishing a shooting stick and a bottle of port. But after last night, I mean, I don't know about a coup, but it's certainly a purge. Disagree with the leader, you're out the party. Any dissenting voices are out of a job. Kenneth Clark, father of the house. You don't want a no-deal Brexit, really? Thanks for your service. It's actually quite chilling. You know, people who voted with the present Prime Minister against the last Prime Minister to stop her attempts to deliver Brexit are suddenly branded enemies of the people overnight because they dare to say it how they see it, that in their opinion, a no deal is a disaster. Surely parliamentary sovereignty is about debate. The Tories have always been the party of entitlement, but this is like a pantomime version of the Tory party. You've got Rees-Mogg lounging on the front bench like a sinister middle-aged rent boy. Him and Boris used to be a joke, and now they're running the country. I honestly thought Theresa May was a waste of fucking time, but what she was clearly trying to do in her own unimaginably shit and uncharismatic way was an attempt to implement the will of the people as best she could whilst keeping her party together. Boris Johnson is trying to implement the will of Dominic Cummings, Steve Bannon, and he doesn't give a fuck about his party. About loyalty. He doesn't give a fuck about those Tories that have spent decades on the front and back benches. They're now rebels. In Star Wars, you've got rebels and the dark side. Just saying. This week, Nigel Farage said if Boris continues down this route, he will be hailed as a national hero. No, a national supervillain, maybe. What's interesting about Boris getting rid of all these Tory MPs is that even Tory MPs are beginning to realise what a bunch of cunts Tory MPs are. It's like that Mitchell and Webb sketch when they're Nazis going, oh shit, are we the bad guys? Fuck. Justine Greening, right? I've never had any time for her whatsoever. But she's now said she won't stand in the next election. And this is what she said. Right? This tells you all you fucking need to know about how fucked our politics is. I want to focus on making a difference, and I believe I can do that better outside Parliament than inside Parliament. Welcome to politics in 2019. Yeah. Well, already lots of twists and turns in Westminster today. The Chancellor earlier made his...
All right, so that's Jonathan Pye. He's a fake newscaster from the UK who does stand-ups outside of Parliament and, rants about what's going on in the news. I'm terribly sorry. We're having real technical problems today. We have no YouTube for whatever reason, and our audio level is low. I know I can fix it on the post-production, so... this is an episode you may want to come back for the podcast for. All right, we're just going to get on with the show as best as we can, low-tech as it is. All right, I did an interview a little while ago. Let me share that with you. Basically, what it's about is I had been searching for some kind of way to find out about the companies who I give my money to, right? For years, I've been saying we need some kind of a blue book that can tell us the political leanings of the companies that we may patronize. So I happened upon one the other day. Blew my mind because it's exactly what I was looking for. It's not a book. It's an app for your phone, and it's awesome. So here we go. Let's get one of the co-founders of the group on the line. Her name is Abigail Wiest. I'm really excited for our next guest because I've been looking for something like this for a long time. Now, there's a bit of a kerfuffle, I guess, brewing over at The View where Whoopi Goldberg laid into Deborah Messing because Deborah Messing said she wanted a list of who attended this big Donald Trump fundraiser out in Los Angeles. Now, the thing is, information like that is available. You can go to opensecrets.org, and you can find out who's donating what to whom. And you can find out the same information about companies. So to help tailor your you know, your list of approved merchants that you want to give your hard-earned money to. A few years ago, I started talking about this, that we needed to have some kind of a blue book, a thing that ranked corporations on their, I guess, citizenship might be a good way to put it. Anyway, so I'm always on the lookout for something like this. I found a book, actually, I think it was called The Blue Pages. It was a few years old. I found it on Amazon or something. I bought it, but it was already, by the time I opened the book, it was outdated. And my suggestion was, to anybody who would listen, is that we need an app. Well, guess what? The app exists. It does. I found it just about a week or so ago as I was, perusing the interwebs, looking for something similar, and I came across an app called Goods Unite Us. It is available for Android. I have it on my Android phone. I'm guessing it's available as for the iPhone as well. And the more I looked through this app, the more impressed I was, and I said, I got to talk to the people behind it. Well, lo and behold, it appears to be two women behind this wonderful, useful app. We're speaking with one of them right now. Abigail Wiest is the CEO and co-founder of Goods Unite Us. They're on the web at goodsuniteus.com, and of course, you go into your app store on whatever platform you're on and search for Goods Unite Us, and there it is. Abigail Wiest, thank you so much for doing this, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. We are just honored and always grateful to have an opportunity to kind of spread the word about the app, but also about kind of the mission.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how did this come about? What, you're an attorney by trade?
Yeah, I'm a government attorney by trade. I was a local politician for a bit, and have always just kind of been a politically active person, came from a politically active family. My husband, Brian Potts, is also an attorney, and he and I kind of together after the last presidential election were starting to feel like we needed to help find a way to do something about the prevalence of corporate money in politics. And it evolved from a thinking that we, full disclosure, are progressives. Our app is, you know, very usable by people of all political persuasions, mm-hmm. but from a progressive perspective, I was shocked with how much corporate money was involved in the last presidential election.
Right.
And so Brian initially had this great idea that we should do a site where you can purchase goods that are only progressive. And then pretty soon we kind of realized that that's not what consumers really wanted as much, and it was also much harder to do. And what people really seemed to want was just the information so they can make informed purchasing decisions. So very quickly it turned into an app, and we were able to develop an app. And then we got Amy on board, who was our COO, to really help us take this company off the ground. And for me, the real basic idea was, if corporate money is going to be so prevalent and so involved in our election system, and it will be until we get some new Supreme Court case law and some new campaign finance laws,
right.
Until that happens, we need to figure out a way to exist with this corporate money in politics in a way that helps to keep that money from undermining our vote and the democratic process. So we need to have a way to make sure that we are not inadvertently funneling money into companies that are then going to use it to affect elections in a way we don't agree with.
Right.
So, and I think
exactly.
That's happening all the time.
And here's a prime example. All right, I live in South Florida. Our big big grocery store chain down here is called Publix, and Publix has a reputation mm-hmm. of actually being a good company. They take care of their employees. They have a lot of people who start out mm-hmm. with them as like a teenage bag boy and work their way up in the business. They help with college and all that. But over the last few years, I've learned through news reports that Publix is spending a lot of money. They did in the last election cycle to fight the momentum for legalization of medical marijuana, for instance, and so would that turn me off a little bit? And of course, they have their own pharmacy, and so there's ulterior motives there as well. But the more I looked into them, the more I realized they are not only supporting, they supported the Republican governor who just won election, and they're supporting Donald Trump. I don't want to give them my money anymore. And sure enough, I pull up Publix on your app. It's PUBLIX, and it tells me Publix supermarkets. Right away, it comes up with a little red elephant, so I know that they lean Republican. When I open it further, their donation distribution, you tell me, is 86% Republican, 4% Democrat. Combined contribution level, very high. You give me some alternative brands here, a few neutral ones. Stater Brothers is neutral. Trader Joe's, Ahold, that I never heard of, are blue with blue donkeys next to them. And then you've got a couple Aldi and Nice and Easy grocery shops, which have a green, which I'm guessing is minimal. It's a, you know.
Exactly. They're kind of staying out of politics. Yeah.
Okay, good for them. And then I did some other, you know, I looked up Costco because we have a Costco membership, and Costco is firmly in the blue camp. So this has real everyday uses for it as you're out and about. You're at the grocery store and there's a product. And I know, for instance, that Koch Brothers own a lot of toilet paper brands. So say I'm looking at Northern, Quilted Northern. Sure enough, there it is. 99% Republican, 1% Democrat. And it doesn't tell us on here that it's owned, maybe it does, by the Koch brothers, but it basically is telling me I don't want to give my money to this company, and it suggests alternatives. This must have taken a lot of research to get this thing up and running, and as comprehensive as it is.
Yeah, it did, and that's kind of basically how we started. We hired our first employee was a researcher, and we were able to figure out there were different sources that were compiling this data. You mentioned Open Secrets is one of them. And then as we've gotten bigger and we've needed to add more companies that maybe weren't on Open Secrets, we've also figured out a way to do all of that research ourselves, going straight to the FEC, the Federal Election Commission data. So we use kind of a couple different sources depending upon what company we're trying to research. And we get every day we get emails asking for additional companies to be added, and we put them in a queue, and our researcher is, you know, working on that backlog as well. So yes, it's been that's one thing. As we grow, we would like to add some more researchers, really, because now we're getting into the point where we need to start rechecking, because there's going to be new election cycle data available and scores are going to change slightly. So that's one thing that's really important to us, is to, as much as possible, keep the data very accurate and then also update it, because this stuff does change. And companies, we also want to give companies an incentive to change. Maybe they want to get out of politics so they don't risk offending a consumer base.
Sure.
And then we will update your information as you do that. So yes, it's a really exciting thing. We get emails all the time from people talking about major changes in their consumer behavior, which is wonderful, because as a voter, we really need to be able to track where our money is going and make sure that it's not going to directly undermine our vote. Our vote is once a year, maybe twice, a year. And everything we're doing every single day is also having an effect on that. And at this point, you know, we really need to start living and being aware of where our money is going to kind of protect that vote.
Right. Now, Abigail Wiest, again, the CEO and founder of Goods Unite Us, an app you need on your phone. Now, I got the app is free. I don't see any advertising. Yes. How do you make money?
Well, so that's a good question. It's very important to us, and we decided this early on, that we really wanted this information to be free to people, because it should be publicly. I mean, it is publicly available. It's just not publicly accessible. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that by making it more accessible, we still keep it free. So that was very important right at the get-go. We are at this point in our startup and our company's growth, we are experimenting with different revenue models. We are putting advertisements in a certain percentage just to see how that goes, see if that interferes with retention and things like that, too. So we're going to be doing a little bit of advertising. We're going to try to make it as minimal as possible so that the experience itself isn't undermined. We have a couple other ideas, too, for revenue models. One of the things you noted earlier is that we have alternate brands underneath. Mm-hmm. And one thing we try to do with that is try to give people some alternatives. If they don't like what a certain company's politics are, we can give them some other alternatives underneath. And one potential revenue model has to do with, you know, marketing packages where if you want to be listed as an alternative, we'll put your score up.
Oh, that's
and
a
that
good
seems
idea.
Consistent with our beliefs, too, because it's just information. It's not giving them any – we're not changing their data. We're just putting them up as an alternative maybe on a competitor's brand. If someone doesn't like Toyota's score, they might like Mazda's or,
right,
you know, vice
right.
versa.
By the way, that it also has a component in the app, rate yourself. You get your own political
yeah.
breakdown and campaign finance reform score, and it asks you things like what kind of car do you drive, where do you buy your gas, who's your cell phone provider, where do you buy your groceries, where have you eaten out, who do you owe money to, where do you buy your clothes and what brands, where do you get your health insurance, where do you buy furniture or household goods, and which of the following is your television or internet provider. And then it rates you, and I guess I have some work to do because I come out 48% Democrat, 52% Republican. So
yeah.
my campaign
yeah.
finance reform score is minus 19. Not quite sure what that means, but then it gives you your score report, and it tells me, for instance, my cell phone carrier is T-Mobile. I lose 40 points for that. But yeah. I shop at Costco and Whole Foods, so I get 108 points for that. So this is fascinating. Did somebody come up with an algorithm here to figure this out?
Yeah, this was an element that Brian was really interested in, and I think it's worked really well. The idea being that it gives you kind of a snapshot of your, there's a lot of data on what an average American's, spending goes to. And so we include just kind of the top things that people spend their money on.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, the algorithm weights those depending upon what the data shows in terms of, like, what percentage of your income goes to, in the banking industry, what percent goes to food, what percent goes to clothing. So we weight it kind of consistent with what that data shows. And then we give you kind of an idea of are your purchases leaning left or are they leaning right?
Right.
And one thing that's so important about that is that I think we were all surprised by our score. And I know my husband changed his cell phone carrier
wow.
because of it.
Wow.
And so there are some, and we're actually in the process of changing our banking because based on that too.
Uh-huh.
So it gives you some kind of big ticket items that you can change if you want to make an impact on that. One thing that's important to keep in mind in all of this is how much money you're giving to this type, to this company, and how much money that company is putting into the system.
Right.
You know, and then we can, you know, because we can't change everything probably, but you can, you know, really get the low-hanging fruit by maybe changing some of the things that you're spending a lot of money on. And especially if it's a company that is putting a lot of money then into politics. So
mm-hmm.
their contribution level really matters. So the rate yourself really helps people kind of get an overview of whether your kind of general purchasing and your major ticket items are kind of going to help Republicans or going to help Democrats.
This is great. How long has the Goods Unite Us app been up and running?
So we've been up and running for a little over a year now.
Okay.
The company's been around for about 2 years. The app really got moving a lot more, about maybe almost 18 months now. But it's gotten better and better as we've added some new features and things like that. Now we have politicians. You can see, you know, if someone who doesn't care as much about just red versus blue, but cares more about individual politicians,
right.
Go, okay, I can look at who's donating to Donald Trump and just not shop there, if
uh-huh.
that's what interests you.
And
so it gives you a little more specificity.
Right. So that whole Deborah Messing, Whoopi Goldberg kerfuffle that I mentioned earlier is kind of a moot point. You don't need a list. All you need is the Goods Unite Us app, and you can give your money to the people and the companies that you believe deserve it. Abigail Wiest, I love that you put this together. Again, for years I've been talking with people, not seriously, but about the need for something like this and how much I would love to do it, but it's totally out of my wheelhouse, and you did it. So it's here. Again, I just highly encourage everyone. This is something I stumbled upon. I reached out to Abigail and her partner to do an interview because I want to help promote this. I want everyone to know that it exists. So go to your app store, whether it's Google Play or the whatever it is on iTunes, the app store, wherever you get your apps, and just put in Goods Unite Us, and it's that simple. Abigail, thank you so much for doing this, and I hope it takes off, I think it's going to help a lot of people.
Oh, thank you so much for having us on, and we really appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We'll stay in touch, I hope.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much. That's Abigail Wiest, again, from Goods Unite Us. Their website is goodsuniteus.com. And go to your app store, wherever you get your apps for your phone, and just put in Goods Unite Us. I'm telling you, look, they didn't pitch me on this. They didn't send me an email about it. I found it. I stumbled upon it and spent a few hours playing with it and thought, oh, my God, this is exactly what we need. So do help spread the word. It doesn't cost you anything. I'm not getting anything out of it. It's a very cool app. So I will not go shopping or go to a restaurant or anything without checking it first, because I want to make sure my money is going to people who support the same things I support. There you have it. All right. Coming up, I promised you we're going to deal with gun violence today. We are we've reached epidemic proportions. I mentioned yesterday with Laffy, I read a tweet that purported to be from the Taliban had warned Afghanis against traveling to the United States because of gun violence. Apparently, the site where it came from is a parody site akin to The Onion. I hate when places do that and then they don't say, this is a joke. I'm pretty gullible, and I kind of bought it. Then again, Laffy did too. But, you know, when it's questionable like that, it could be a thing. I just, you know, anyway. So that wasn't a real story. But it is true that countries around the globe are, issuing travel advisories against coming here because it's not safe. Who knows what Congress is going to do when it comes back next week, but in a few minutes we're going to speak with Penny Okamoto. She's been working to reduce gun violence since 2000. She's doing a number of things that we'll get into. And the main thing we're going to tell you about is this new gun violence database that Penny is the director of. And we'll find out what we've learned about gun violence, what we can still learn, and what works. Any of the legislation that's gone through, and granted, there hasn't been much of it, but find out what works. We'll get into all that in just a moment. But first, as promised, a look at what's news. Take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hurricane Dorian finally moved away from the Bahamas Tuesday and left behind major destruction and, in many places, complete devastation. One relief worker told the Associated Press, quote, "It's total devastation. It's decimated. Apocalyptic. It looks like a bomb went off. It's not rebuilding something that was there. We have to start again." 7 deaths have already been reported, and more information is expected to emerge in the coming days as more about the storm is known. It is now a Category 2 hurricane and on track to hug the coasts of Florida and Georgia through Wednesday night before moving up toward the Carolinas on Thursday and Friday. As if on cue, CNN's first-of-its-kind evening of climate crisis town halls begins Wednesday night at 5 p.m. Eastern, followed in a couple of weeks by a similar forum on MSNBC. Well, it's baby steps. But Walmart said Tuesday that it would discontinue the sale of ammunition used in high-capacity magazines and military-style weapons. It's also stopped the sale of handguns in Alaska, the last state where they permitted that. Walmart has asked its customers not to openly carry firearms in stores, even in states where open carry is permitted. So good news from a big corporation. Now we need Congress to act. Proving why his new nickname fits, Massacre Mitch, the Senate Majority Leader, went on a right-wing radio show on Tuesday where he was asked why he refused to bring up the universal background check bill the House passed earlier this year. McConnell said, "We're in a discussion about what to do on the gun issue in the wake of these horrendous shootings. I said several weeks ago that if the president took a position on a bill that we knew would actually be making a law and not just having serial votes, I'd be happy to put it on the floor." Amy Klobuchar, in response, said literally he's giving up the power of the Senate. And on Sunday, Donald Trump said that the mass shooting in West Texas the day before, quote, "really hasn't changed anything." Continuing, he said, over the last 5, 6, or 7 years, no matter how strong you make your background checks, it wouldn't have stopped any of it. Wrong. This last shooter in Odessa bought his gun in a private sale, which currently doesn't require a background check, which he would have failed. The House passed bill would have worked in this case, and 7 people would likely still be alive. From the protests work file, in a video address, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam announced a full withdrawal of the extradition bill that has sparked months of sometimes violent arrests on city streets to, quote, fully allay public concerns. Protests erupted in June in Hong Kong after Lam put forward a bill allowing people to be extradited to mainland China to be tried by the justice system there. Over in the UK, things are getting, well, Trumpy, I guess. Boris Johnson, the new prime minister, has lost control of Parliament. Facing his first House of Commons vote on the first day of the new parliamentary term, Johnson fell to a big defeat as 21 of his own Conservative members of Parliament joined forces with opposition parties to back the first stage of legislation that will delay Brexit again from its current date of October 31st if no deal with the EU is in sight. It's kind of complicated, so let's get this explainer of what the hell's going on over there from CNN.
A rebel alliance of lawmakers rose up against the UK Prime Minister and moved to put a stop to a no-deal Brexit. Boris Johnson then sacked 21 members of his own party who had backed the measure, and he made good on his threat to seek a general election. Take a listen.
The leader of the opposition has been begging for an election for 2 years. He has crowds of supporters outside calling for an election. I don't want an election, but if MPs vote tomorrow to stop negotiations and to compel another pointless delay to Brexit, potentially for years, then that would be the only way to resolve this. And I can confirm that we are tonight tabling a motion under the fixed term Parliament Act.
I think that the only positive thing one can take of this right now, we've really reached a breaking point, perhaps even a new breaking point. But I think that having Boris Johnson at the helm and his group, his cabinet of Brexiteers, after these 3 years when he allowed the transition and Prime Minister May to be there, is they're starting to understand, while being in the hot seat, what it is really like to deal with this particular issue. And I think that what we have been witnessing in Parliament for the last few hours is essentially a fight to the death on the question of Brexit, with Boris Johnson's party desperately trying to appeal to Nigel Farage and to the Brexit Party, without whom they cannot win a general election. And on the other side of the political spectrum, the opposition coming together, not so much for something or a particular definition of Brexit, but against a no deal. And it seems that as things stand right now, they've succeeded at least in achieving that.
Closer to home, the Pentagon is moving forward with the Trump administration's plan to move billions of dollars away from military projects to fund the construction of his stupid wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, officially authorized the transfer of up to $3.6 billion. Come on, Congress, do something. A North Carolina court ruled Tuesday that the state's legislative districts are unconstitutional. It's a unanimous decision that opens a new front in the national battle over partisan gerrymanders. The judges set a deadline of September 17th by which North Carolina's Republican-led General Assembly must submit redrawn state House and Senate district maps to be reviewed by a court-appointed referee. In their ruling, the judges stated that the plaintiffs had proved the effect of the partisan maps drawn by the state legislature was that, quote, in all but the most unusual election scenarios, the Republican Party will win a majority of both chambers of the General Assembly. And finally, congratulations are in order to friend of the show, Brian Karam, Playboy correspondent of the U.S. A judge has blocked the White House's decision to revoke his press pass over a Rose Garden incident with former White House aide Sebastian Gorka. The judge, Rudolph Contreras, issued a decision Tuesday night granting a preliminary injunction restoring Karam's hard pass on the grounds that the reporter had no clear notice of the rules governing press behavior at events like the presidential appearance that preceded the heated exchange. All righty then. I got good. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. All my work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. Just click the donate button. Thanks.
All right, Nicole Sandler here with you. Sorry, we're having technical problems today, so we're audio only on this Wednesday edition of the show. I keep thinking there's other things I need to do because I'm so used to dealing with all the shots on YouTube and all that. So I'm a bit out of sorts here. The podcast will be posted as per usual for those who had a problem hearing throughout the show. The audio levels should be fixed, and so hopefully this will sound just fine as you listen to your regular podcast. So let's move on, shall we? All right. You know, just when you think things can't get worse, they do. We've barely gotten through two mass shootings within 12 hours of one another, and not even a week goes by after that we get word of yet another mass shooting. The latest one happened this past weekend. They're all weird, aren't they? It was in Odessa and Midland, Texas. It was a guy who had been fired from his job, although later they determined that it wasn't the firing that set this man off, that he was already, I guess, out of sorts before he showed up at work and got fired. But then he got in his car and he started just opening fire on anyone and everyone who was around. Killed 7 people, injured 20-some-odd, and these things are part of the American fabric today, and it sucks, and we need to do something about it. Congress comes back into session, well, the House Judiciary Committee is back today to deal with gun violence. The rest of Congress comes back on Monday, and if you listen to, you know, Massacre Mitch, nothing is going to change because Massacre Mitch wants to know that Donald Trump will sign whatever bill he puts in front of him. It didn't used to be that way. Congress would do their work. They would pass a bill and present it to the president, who would either sign it or not. This is, I think the technical term for it is bullshit. Sorry, truly bullshit. Anyway, thankfully, there are many groups out there doing the hard work of trying to get some sense into our gun laws, or actually get some actual gun laws on the books that might make a difference. To that end, I'm happy to welcome our guest to the program today. Her name is Penny Okamoto. She's been working to reduce gun violence since 2000. She's worked in a number of different functions. She was a coordinator of volunteers for the Million Mom March in Portland. She joined the Ceasefire Oregon Board of Directors in 2000 and has been the executive director there since 2010. She's also the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon Education Foundation since 2015. And now, there she's got another title added to her repertoire. Penny Okamoto is the director of GVpedia. Let me say that again. GVpedia. It's a GVpedia, I think, .org. And we'll tell you all about what it is. And let me first say hello to Penny. Hi, Penny. You there?
Hi, Nicole. Hi. So much.
I'll
be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Sorry about the technical problems we're experiencing.
No worry.
What happens? So let's start with, what is GVpedia?
Sure. You know, I actually really just want to first say that our thoughts are truly with all the people who are threatened or suffering from the damages of Hurricane Dorian.
Yep.
All who are on the path, we've got them in our thoughts. And especially on the West Coast today, we're really thinking about the people who, the 33 and probably 34 people who lost their lives in the boating accident off of California today. It's a horrific tragedy.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely, yep. Horrific. It's just, you know, and I'm in Florida. We just skirted, you know, we just dodged a bullet with Dorian, who was, you know, sitting right off our shore for 2 days or longer.
Yes.
And what's happening in the Bahamas is just horrific. It's just devastating. So it's like the world is crumbling all around us, and we're trying to just find our way through to some semblance of sanity.
It is, you know, in a way, you know, it truly does feel like that. But we have incredible people in the world and in the United States who are truly fighting back against this. And that actually leads me to GVpedia and GVpedia's founder, Devin Hughes.
Okay.
So GVpedia is actually a database of more than 1,000 studies about gun violence prevention. So we have two parts of it. One is the database. It's a searchable database of, like I said, 1,000 studies, over 1,000 studies. And some of those studies don't agree with what GVpedia, with the Denver Accord, which I'll get into in a minute. But most of them do. We actually base our data, or excuse me, we base our positions for the Denver Accord on studies and data. The other part of GVpedia is GVpedia University. And this is a collection of white papers that takes the data, pulls it together for people, and really says, you know, explains what it's about, what the data and what the data means, and lets people go forth and use data. I'm going to pull one white paper from here really quickly. This is the white paper written by Devin Hughes on guns and women. And just one particular note on here. You know, because a lot of people seem to think that, you know, guns are going to be a great equalizer for women, and we know that they're not. In fact, we know that studies show that gun threats in the home against women by their intimate partners are much more prevalent than self-defense uses by women across the United States. And we actually link to the studies here, but the one that really kind of gets my heart is when you take a look at the international context for women. So U.S. women make up about a third of the developed women's female population, but they account for 90% of all the female firearm deaths in those countries. And that was from 2010.
Wow.
And it's 91% of the kids aged 0 to 14. So of all those countries, and these are going to be populous, wealthy countries, so they're going to be similar to the United States. 90% of the women who are shot to death in all those countries are in the United States, and 91% of the kids 0 to 14 are shot in the United States.
Wow. Yeah, the statistics are frightening, and those things that we don't know about. Thankfully, lately, there has been pushback on the idea that having a gun in your house will protect you, when, as the statistics seem to show, if you have a gun in your house, the chances of you getting shot by that gun rise exponentially.
Right. That's a great study by Andrew Engelmeyer. This was actually done in 2014, and it shows that a gun in the home, suicide in the home, you're going to be twice as likely to die of a homicide, three times as likely to die of suicide if you've got a firearm in the home. And that's one of the things that the gun manufacturers never tell people about, the high rate of suicide with firearms. Now, some people say, well, there's a substitution effect, meaning if you don't have a gun, you'll do something else. First of all, studies show that's just not true. Second of all, more than 80%, really it's more 90% of suicide attempts with firearms are fatal, whereas the suicide attempts with non-firearms really varies kind of depending on what you're using, but at best they're going to be about 20, I shouldn't say at best, at most effective, they're going to be about 20% fatal. So the fatality rate with firearms is so much greater. And then also, generally speaking, people who don't actually kill themselves end up suffering, you know, horrific damage from the gunshot wound.
Right.
But suffocation, which is hanging, pills, other things, far less fatal than firearms.
Of course. Again, Penny Yakamoto is with us. We started off talking about that you're the director of GVpedia. And I started looking through this. It's basically a database of all the gun violence that's affected this country?
Well, no, it's the gun violence studies.
Oh, it's the gun violence studies. Okay.
Right. So these are the studies. There's a similar website called Gun Violence Archive that actually has a list of all the gun violence, and they record that in real time since right after Sandy Hook. But GVpedia has the studies in the database. But GVpedia also presented what we call the Denver Accord, and it's at denveraccord.org, denveraccord.org, denveraccord.org. So the Denver Accord really puts together so let me give you a little history about the Denver Accord.
Okay.
GVpedia wanted to acknowledge the 20th anniversary of the Columbine shooting. That was just this past April, 20 years since Columbine.
Wow.
So we brought together survivors, advocates, experts, put them in one room and said, We want to solve these issues. We want to solve police violence. We want to solve suicide. We want to solve domestic violence, you know, homicide. What do we need to do? What are going to be the best policies and practices that we can implement for that? Pulled it all together and distilled it into a document that we call the Denver Accord. And it's broken up into three main sections. The first is putting safety first. The second is letting laws work. And the third is protecting community. But now I'm going to quickly highlight. So we know that. So what we really need is we need licensing. Like background checks, the federal bill, H.R. 8, which would require background checks for almost all gun sales, including private sales.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. We need licensing to make sure that we're, because the studies show that licensing reduces gun violence.
Right.
And we also know that 82% from this latest Quinnipiac PAC poll from August 29, 2019, shows that 82% of people surveyed support requiring a license to purchase a gun. So why aren't we there? Why aren't we doing that?
Good, really good question. The numbers, as you said, are huge. I saw a statistic last night about that very thing, that huge majorities of Americans not only support universal background checks, but registration, licensing as requirement for gun ownership. So it's really the NRA are the only ones pushing back against this, aren't they? Obviously, they represent the gun industry, gun manufacturers, ammunition manufacturers, the sellers. But is there anybody other than the NRA representing these groups that is pushing back on this?
Sure. I mean, there are organizations that, you know, and again, basically they're representing people who sell guns.
Right.
But, you know, there are some of the state gun lobbies. There are some other national gun lobbies. But it is mostly the NRA, which is, you know, falling apart right now. But you kind of remember the NRA is really all about selling firearms.
Yep.
I mean, that's why they wanted, you know, and you have to remember, too, in the United States, we've had about 393 million firearms in civilian hands. So at about 3% of the gun owners in the United States own half of all those firearms. So you're selling firearms to a saturated market.
Right.
And we know that gun ownership is actually decreasing. Fewer and fewer households are owning firearms, and firearm ownership is usually measured in terms of households. So you've got a saturated market, fewer and fewer people wanting to buy. So the NRA wants to do things like assault weapons. So you can buy this brand new shiny gun or concealed carry. So you have to buy a different gun so you can stuff it into your purse and your two-year-old can find it when you're in Walmart in Idaho and shoot you to death. So,
right.
Which is actually what happens. So we know that it all has to do with marketing and gun sales, because where else are they going to sell their guns in the world the way they do here?
Yeah, good question. So let me ask this, Penny, about, you know, there are Donald Trump, for instance, not that he knows anything about anything, but he likes to shoot his mouth off constantly anyway. He's been saying, well, you know, we already have background checks, and the background checks wouldn't have changed anything in these recent shootings. Actually, the bill that passed the House of Representatives that Mitch McConnell has been sitting on and refusing to bring to the Senate floor for a vote would have made a difference in this last shooting, where the shooter went to bought his gun through a private sale because he could not pass a background check. Right now, there's no law for requiring background checks on private sales or at gun shows. That's what this bill that the House already passed would fix. If that law was in effect, this guy wouldn't have been able to get the gun, would he?
He probably would not have, because when people sell a firearm in Oregon, for example, where I'm at, we do have universal background checks now. If someone sells a firearm, that firearm's used in a crime, the crime gun is then traced back to the original owner. That original owner did not complete a background check and should have completed a background check. That original owner actually could face charges and be held civilly liable or criminally liable in certain cases. So when you've got people who are saying, I'm not willing to sell a firearm to you without a background check because I don't want to go to jail for you. And that's how those laws work. You know, some people say, well, you don't have a cop at every sale. Well, of course you don't. That's not how laws work.
Right.
The law works by tracing it back and then finding out who actually originally sold the gun to the prohibited person and holding that person liable.
I see. All right. You know, I live in Florida, and I live in actually a town called Coral Springs. We are the next town over from Parkland. That's our sister town. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is one of four high schools that serves our community. So this was very personal, obviously. I mean, all these shootings are. But when it happens in your community, it hits you even harder. So out of that tragedy, there was slight progress here in Florida. They did pass, what is it called, a red line bill or something that, you can explain it better than I can. This is, what came out of Parkland?
Right. So, you know what, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to answer the extremist protection order first.
Gotcha.
I want to tell you from 20 years of working on this, what really came out of Parkland.
Okay.
So after Sandy Hook, people were, they were beside themselves with grief. They thought, surely now, 20 dead babies, 6 dead educators, surely Congress will act. And of course, nothing happened. But after Parkland, people were beside themselves with grief and fury. I have never seen anything like this in 20 years. People literally taking to the streets. And so that's one of the big things that changed Parkland in terms of big things changed after Parkland, in terms of a national movement. But let me talk to you a little bit about the extremist protection order that Florida has.
Okay.
So extremist protection orders, and we've been asked to not call them red flag laws, mental health community, and I totally understand why they want that. So we do call them extremist protection orders. Now, having said that, some states call them gun violence restraining orders or something else, but they're usually called extreme risk or extreme risk protection orders. So in Florida, only law enforcement has the ability to petition a court for an extreme risk order. So law enforcement's going to be made aware of someone who is making threats against someone else or making threats of suicide. People can contact law enforcement. Law enforcement can petition the courts to actually have this extreme risk protection order. And then it goes to a court. And I can go through the details if you want, but basically a court decides whether or not there is a real risk. And then the person's firearms are going to be taken away from them for a temporary period of time. But here's the key. The person will also not be able to go out and purchase additional firearms.
Okay. Okay. That's a good thing.
Yes. Yes, that is good. And it's temporary.
Right.
Yeah. Because we want that person to be able to get the help that person needs before something horrific happens.
Sure. Now let me ask you this. So in the case of the shooter, and I never say these shooters' names. I don't even know what they are. The one, Odessa Midland, he was reported, right? A neighbor went to the police and said that this guy threatened her with a large rifle last month, but nothing happened.
That's exactly right. So the law enforcement could have instituted or petitioned for an extreme risk protection order. I believe law enforcement said they couldn't find the person on GPS.
Oh, my God.
Whatever. You know, there are several missed opportunities here to have prevented the Odessa shooting. First of all, you have to find out whoever sold the person the gun or if the gun was stolen. We have to look into that because that's how legal gun owners actually unwittingly arm criminals is they leave their guns in their cars or they leave their guns, you know, in their homes out, you know, not in the safe. And people break into their home or they break into the car and they steal the firearm. And studies show that at least 237,000 guns are stolen every year. So we don't know if the shooter, could have stolen the gun. My understanding and what I've read is that he actually did an attempted sale. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
The other thing that happened, a big fallacy to kind of really burst the bubble of people who believe in self-defense is that the first person who encountered the Odessa shooter was an armed, trained police officer.
Oh, really? And The shooter shot him, right?
That is my understanding, yes. So an armed trained police officer was not able to stop this. But yet we expect people in, we expect teachers in schools to be able to stop it.
It's ridiculous.
So no, that's a pretty big doubt. And then the third one, of course, is that it could have been prevented from an extreme risk protection order by the police. So, you know, Texas failed their citizens, you know, in several different ways that day, unfortunately.
Obviously.
Having said that, there were a lot of incredibly brave people and police officers who didn't actually end up bringing it to an end. But they, but Texas sure didn't do what they could to prevent it, did they?
No, they did not. So, Penny, so here we are. Congress comes back into session next week. Do you have any optimism that this time they'll do something?
You know, normally I'd say no, but this is such an unusual time. People are so angry about this situation. I think that there is an opportunity. I know that a lot of the grassroots groups, especially like Newtown Action Alliance, States United to Prevent Gun Violence, Ceasefire Oregon, we're all doing our work to make sure that people are contacting their congresspeople when they get to, you know, when they come back. So that could happen. Another thing that's kind of happening in the wings that's, you know, not people aren't really aware of is something called the export rules change. This is kind of arcane, but it's really important. And the export rules change would allow Mr. Trump to have the any type of sales overseas, so firearm sales overseas to foreign countries, actually run through the Commerce Department. Right now, it's through the State Department. But the gun lobby would like to have that changed through the Commerce Department. It's pretty dangerous. And right now, so it's long story short, you also want to contact your representative and tell them to support the Torres Amendment. That's from Representative Torres from California, T-O-R-R-E-S, the Torres Amendment. I believe it's 512. That would stop the export rules change.
Okay.
So that's another thing that could happen, and I don't want to see any horse trading on that. We don't want to see people saying, yeah, we'll pass the Torres Amendment, you know, or block this, whatever. I don't know. I really have no idea of, you know, the what they're going to be doing behind closed doors there. But we need to ask for it all. People who say baby steps, they don't realize baby steps are killing babies.
Yeah.
We need to ask for it all. We need to ask for licensing, registration, you know, everything that we really have.
And an assault weapons ban. And an assault weapons ban. I don't know where you are, right? But there you go.
Newtown Action Alliance is doing a lot of great work on assault weapons ban. Now, some people will say, well, assault weapons, you know, they only kill 2-3% of the people who die from gunshot wounds. Well, first of all, that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, it's a moral imperative to do that. Third, we must do that because the threat of assault weapons and the high-capacity magazines are terrorizing our schools and our kids and our teachers and our parents.
Yep.
People are afraid to send their kids to school because of this. So it's a moral imperative that we ban assault weapons and high capacity magazines.
Without a doubt. Penny Okamoto, what can my listeners do other than call their congressmen and senators and encourage them to do the right thing here? All the things we've been talking about. We need gun licensing and registration. We need a new assault weapons ban. We need all of this stuff. What else would you recommend they do?
You know, go to the Denver Accord website. It's denveraccord.org. You're going to see the Denver Accord right there. It's going to give you exact information for what we need to do. And we have a list for data and studies. You're going to have all the information you need right there.
Okay, so in addition to checking out gvpedia.org, definitely check out the denveraccord.org. Lots of information there. Penny, thank you so much for joining us today. There's tons of information. I know we could keep talking for hours, and I'm sure we'll have many more occasions to talk in the future. Hopefully not, but yeah. History tells us otherwise.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time. Take care. Bye-bye. And with that, we come to the end of another show. I do apologize for the technical problems today. Hopefully, I'll have everything cleared up so the podcast will sound perfect. And depending how long that takes me, maybe I'll even post it as a video on YouTube. Without the video, but the show will be there anyway, because we gave out some important information today. Don't forget about Goods Unite Us, all right? Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be along and whatever else the day brings us. Until then, as always, thank you for listening, especially today. Thank you for putting up with all the mishigas. I'm Nicole Sandler. Until next time, keep the faith, baby.